Good morning or good afternoon. I wanted to welcome officially everyone to the start of today's InterNet Seminar on Cost Unit Leader Training, which has been sponsored by the EPA's Office of Emergency Management. My name is Jean Balance, and I come here from EPA in the Technology, Innovation, and Field Services Division, and I'll be assisting with moderation for today's session. We will formally kick off the training with some introduction to the materials as well as our speakers in just about 2 minutes or so. But until then, I'm going to give a few latecomers a couple extra minutes to hop on the line and get situated with us. And until then, I'll cover some basic housekeeping items so that everyone's familiar with how today's session will run. Again, when you registered or signed up to participate for this session, which again is focused or it will be looking specifically at EPA material, so it's intended for EPA staff, you would have been directed to a seminar homepage, which had a description of today's event, contact information for all of our instructors as well as bios, and then also links or options to download the materials following the links at the bottom of the page, or also to look at those materials online through a web browser window by clicking on the Go to Seminar button. That very same email or information was contained in a confirmation and reminder email you should have received from me earlier this week. I just wanted to remind everyone, if you haven't accessed those slides, please go ahead and either download them or click the button Go to Seminar to look at them starting on slide number one. Again, if you have follow-up comments or questions, you can certainly go back to the seminar homepage to refer to the instructors. But another thing I want to point out on this homepage, and I'll remind you today at the close of our session, is at the bottom, and as well as a link that appears on the button on the left, is a feedback option. And it's a short form that we will ask each of you to fill out. In order to get credit for participating today, you will need to participate in the full training as well as successfully submit feedback using that link. I'll direct everyone to that very same link at the end of today's session, but I wanted to be sure you could find that link on the seminar homepage. Again, those of you who are on the phone, I'm going to ask and remind you to keep your phones on mute. I will also verbally direct everybody to move on to this next slide, which would be slide number two, which is our housekeeping slide. If you don't have a mute button, you can use the mute commands, which are part of our phone system here. You can simply hit star 6 to mute your phone. And if you have a comment or question at any point in time, you're welcome to take yourself off of mute by hitting pound 6. I would also remind the instructors as well, if you're not speaking, we would recommend you keep yourselves on mute until it's your turn. Again, star 6 to mute, pound 6 to unmute. Also, don't put the call on hold. Sometimes there's background noise that can be disruptive and will interrupt the speakers. Those of you that are streaming the slides online and are listening to the audio through your speakers, that mute command has nothing to do with you. You guys can certainly sit back and feel free to interact or dialogue with yourselves because we won't be able to hear you. But if you do want to interact or respond to a question, actually ask a comment or ask a question of the instructors or make a comment about the materials you'll see today, when you're looking at your slides online, you'll see a series of orange icons that appear along the top. You can use those icons to move through the materials. Again, the arrow pointing to the right, the single arrow to the right will move you forward one slide. The single arrow pointing to the left will move you backwards one slide. You can also use the numbered links that appear on the left side to move through the materials at cues from the instructors. You can also use the button with a question mark on it to open up a new window. So in that case, you want to be sure your pop-up blockers have been disabled. And if you click that question mark button, a small form will open up and allow you to type up a comment or question that I will read on your behalf to the instructors. You do not have to wait to Q&A in order to ask a question or make a comment. You can do that at any point in time. Even if you're listening to us by phone, which you feel more comfortable, you can certainly use that question mark icon to submit any comments or questions you have at any point in time. As far as Q&A, they will be taking questions at any point during the session. So if you are on the phone lines, again, you can take yourselves off of mute by hitting pound 6 to ask a question or make a comment at any point. If you're having any technical problems, you can also use that question mark icon to report the technical difficulty to us. Just be sure to include a telephone number where we can reach you so that we can troubleshoot the issues. A reminder again, our instructors will be indicating as they move through the material, so you'll have to turn the page, use the numbered links, or use that arrows pointing to the right to move forward. At the end of today's session, again, I will direct everyone to two final links, which are very important. The first one is a resource page where you can download materials related to the session. And the second one, again, will be that feedback form. And I will remind everyone again at the end, but if you would like to receive credit as part of that process, you need to successfully complete the feedback form. Part of the feedback form will give you an option to check a box to have a confirmation email sent to you for your records, and the instructors are asking that you do that in order to maintain your records for your response core training. So I think with that, those are the end or the last of the final reminders that I have for today's presentation. So I'm going to ask that people move along to slide number 3, which is the technical beginning of the materials for today. And I'm going to turn things over to Roberta, who's coming out of the EPA's Office of Emergency Management, who will do an introduction for today's materials. Roberta?
Thank you, Jean. Good afternoon, everybody. As Jean mentioned, my name is Roberta Runge. I'm the National NEMS Coordinator with the Office of Emergency Management in D.C. This is the Cost Unit Leader webinar for Response Support Corps members. We have some outstanding instructors fresh from the BP response, so this should be a really excellent course for you. First up is Cindy Brown, who has 10 years of experience as a team leader in the Superfund Finance Program in Region 6. She was involved in development of the ICS Finance Section Chief Training, the 213 Resource Request Form, the Field Procurement Course taught at Readiness, all the Finance Section job aids and desk aids, and this course. She's a nationally recognized instructor for the Finance Section Chief Key Leadership position. She has been involved in the Katrina response, the Columbia Shuttle response, Hurricane Ike, and she survived the BP response. John Anderson in Region 7 is with the Superfund Cost Recovery Program and has been involved in Katrina, Rita, Gustav, Ike, and the Iowa floods, and of course the BP response. He is a nationally recognized instructor for the Finance Section Chief KLP course as well. Jim Miller is the chief of the Superfund Support Branch in Region 4. He's acted as the Finance Section Chief in a number of responses and is a nationally recognized instructor for the Finance Section Chief course. He responded to Ivan, Katrina, and most recently, BP. This is the first of three webinars for unit leader positions under the Finance Section. The other two webinars are Procurement Unit Leader and Time Unit Leader. Those courses will be offered in early 2011. This course, again, is for Response Support Corps personnel who would respond when requested with a regional incident management team to handle tracking and reporting costs during a major incident. The cost unit leader is responsible for estimating when funds will be exhausted, ensuring contractor funding is tracked, and develop a burn rate projection for the response. The cost unit leader reports directly to the finance section chief. This is a very difficult, critical component of a response, and your willingness to act in this capacity is greatly appreciated. If you need any additional information on other aspects of responding under the incident command system, please go to the website on epaosc.net, click the headquarters logo, and you'll see the NEMS integration team website. All job aids, desk aids, and the Incident Management Handbook are posted along with agency orders regarding NEMS implementation. You can also just send me an email message with your questions or contact your NEMS implementation team member in your region. They're listed on the website. At this point, I'm going to turn this over to the experts. So, Cindy, you're up.
Thank you, Roberta. As Roberta just mentioned, this webinar is for a specific audience made up of EPA employees who are interested in really becoming cost unit leaders and actually participating in an incident as part of the finance section. You're going to see that the cost unit leader plays a vital role in developing cost information for the incident management team. Next slide, please. This webinar will focus on the specific position of the cost unit leader within the incident command structure. And hopefully by the end of this presentation, you'll have a better understanding of the responsibilities of the cost unit leader and know what's really expected of the person performing these duties, as well as what's included in the job aids for this position. We'll talk about some of the specific duties as well as go over some of the resources that will help you better perform your job. Next slide. And the presenters today, as mentioned, are myself, Cindy Brown, Jim Miller from Region 4, and John Anderson from Region 7. Next slide. The cost unit leader is a key position in the finance section, and in many ways is really the right-hand man or woman to the finance section chief. The information you will provide to the finance section chief will be used to develop cost analysis for the daily situation report, the SITREP, and for information going into the Incident Action Plan, the IAP. Besides collecting cost data for the SITREP and the IAP, the cost unit leader may also be asked to provide special burn rate reports as needed by the incident commander. Keep in mind that each incident commander has their own management styles, some their own likes and dislikes, and some will ask for very detailed financial information and some will ask for very high-level financial information. It just depends, like most of us, on how they visualize and process financial information. So the best advice I can give you here is stay flexible. Next slide. What you're looking at now is an organization chart for a complete incident management team. At the very top, you're going to see the incident commander. The next three positions are all part of the commander's command staff, the public information officer, safety officer, and liaison officer, and they all report directly to the incident commander. The next level are the section chiefs for the incident management team. They're considered the general staff, and again, they report directly to the incident commander. The section chiefs are operations section, planning section, logistics section, and finance administrative section. And the cost unit leader is one of the four unit leader positions within the finance section. Although not detailed here on this org chart, the cost unit leader may have other people working as part of his or her team. They may have reporting to them a number of field accountants who go out to the various sites and review daily contract expenditures, as well as the fund certifying official. And the fund certifying official is the person that actually funds all the purchases associated with an event. And this person will probably be positioned in the host regional office, so you're not going to have a lot of contact with this individual. But for logic's sake, they were placed under the cost unit leader in the org chart. Again, let me stress, the cost unit leader is a key player in the finance section. Next slide. This slide lists some of the prerequisite training that's required of the cost unit leader, as well as all of the positions on an incident management team. And most of these trainings are readily available. Let's just go through them briefly. The Independent Study 100 and 200 are both FEMA trainings that you can find on the FEMA website under FEMA.training. Independent Study 100 is an introduction to incident command. It takes a couple of hours. It goes real quick. Independent Study 200 is single resources and initial action incidents. Again, it's not a very long training. The next two, EPA ICS 300 and 400, are always taught in a classroom setting. It takes about 5 full days to teach these two classes, and they're almost always taught together. EPA ICS 300 is intermediate ICS for expanding incidents, and it covers topics such as unified command, establishing incident objectives, planning, resource management, demobilization, and transfer of command. And it's all about standing up a full incident management team. EPA ICS 400 is advanced ICS for command and general staff in complex incidents. And it includes the study of area command and multi-agency coordination. And this course allows you to respond and exercise and interact as a full team. EPA ICS 300 and 400, they've been developed from the FEMA courses, but they've been revised to include EPA policies and regulations and just our way of doing business, so they're much more EPA logical. The last two courses that were added a few years ago are Independent Study 700 and 800. Again, they can be found on the FEMA training websites. Independent Study 700 is an introduction to NIMS, which is the National Incident Management System, and Independent Study 800 is an introduction to the National Resource Framework. Again, these can be found on the FEMA website. We prefer everyone register and take the 300-400 courses through the TRAINEX system so that they can be tracked as a resource for possible response work. Once you've taken the courses, you'll be in the national database as an asset. 300 and 400 courses are offered periodically across the country. If there hasn't been one in your region, you might want to talk to your response support corps coordinator and ask to have a 300-400 course in your region. Next slide. To function successfully as a cost unit leader, it's very helpful to have a good working knowledge of the agency financial accounting and reporting systems. This means you should have a really good working knowledge of Financial Data Warehouse, or Orbit, PeoplePlus, GovTrip, and Removal Cost Management System, RCMS. This last system is one that's used by the ERS and START contractors to track their daily contract cost. And while you may not have previous exposure to this system, it's something that you can pick up pretty quickly. In addition, RCMS is something that's been used more exclusively by the field accountants, which would be reporting to the cost unit leader. RCMS is now required that the contracting officers can actually require the START and ERS contractors to use RCMS And they'll do this especially on these big events. So it certainly makes our cost analysis job a lot easier, and your cost analysis job as the cost unit leader is made easier just because you're getting data in a similar format from our two biggest contracts. RCMS has a great help desk, so again, there's no reason to panic if you've never heard of the system. It has a great help desk, and it also has a training guide available from that help desk. As you can see, this is a very financially oriented position. And to function successfully, it's a real good idea to also be able to use spreadsheets and have an ability to analyze cost data. Next slide. To make your job easier, it's a good idea to have a detailed knowledge of accounting principles as applied to contractor cost accounting and controls. For instance, if you're expected to review daily contract costs, you'll want to get a copy of the contract itself just to determine what's considered allowable cost. But let me make clear right here, if when you're reviewing contractor cost as a cost unit leader or as a field accountant, you would never be taking any responsibilities away from the project officer or contract officer. So what the field accountant does and possibly the cost unit leader would be very cursory reviews of the daily expenditures by our contractors. You need to have a good working knowledge of Excel spreadsheets. Systems such as Excel may be used for daily reporting, which can be part of the SITREP and the IAP. And again, to have a good working knowledge, this is because some incident commanders prefer to see financial data in tables, others want to see it in pie charts, so you just have to be flexible. And remember that what we're doing out in the field or in the REOC is all in support of operation. So whatever the incident commander wants is basically what we should be striving for. As a finance, ready, willing, and able by the with information that he or she needs to make good financial decisions. Next slide. I believe we're on slide 11 now. The next four slides are going to cover common responsibilities for all personnel in the incident command system organization. Doesn't matter if you're the cost unit leader or the incident commander. These responsibilities are for everyone that's in the incident command team. And they can be found in detail in your incident management handbook, the IMH handbook in Chapter 3. If you don't have an IMH handbook, this is a good time to make a note and see your response support core coordinator because they'll have handbooks available. Everybody that goes that's activated, you're going to receive an assignment, probably from the REOC manager. That's the Regional Emergency Operations Center manager. You're going to get a job assignment, and you're going to know exactly what position you're going to be filling in the field before you deploy. You're going to get information about a reporting location and time. You're going to know where and what time you should report to the incident and where you should report to the incident. Are you going to be working in the REOC? In the incident command post, or maybe at a base or a camp, you're going to get all this information before you deploy. And if you don't get this information, start asking questions. Ask the REOC manager or call the finance section chief that's already on site or the cost unit leader that's already been deployed if you're backfilling behind someone. You're going to get travel instructions before you deploy. You should have a funded travel authorization. You might get specific information about rent cars, for instance. They might say something like there are no rent cars available in this area, so bring a rent car from your regional office area. Or they might say something like don't even consider bringing a rent car. We have 30 parking spaces and we've already got 40 cars down here. So you're going to get these kind of little details that are going to make your travel plans easier. You might get special communication instructions, special phone numbers to call, specifically if you are arriving after the incident command post closes for the evening. You might be instructed to call someone and get information about your lodging for the first night. It's a good idea always to review the incident management handbook for what your responsibilities would include before you deploy. You should also review your job aids, which are on the NIMS website, and this is accessible through the epaosc.net website. Throughout the incident, you're going to be amazed at how often you're going to refer to the IMH and to the IAP. These are very valuable resource documents, and they're going to be answering a lot of questions that you're going to have as your days progress. Next slide, please. Upon arrival at the incident, you're going to check in at the designated check-in location. And at this point, you're going to become a resource for the event and actually be tracked in Asset Tracker as having arrived and ready to go to work. Check-in can be found at any at a variety of locations. It could be the incident command post, a staging area, the area command post, the REOC, the Regional Emergency Operations Center, in the region where the event's taking place. You're going to be instructed to report, if you're instructed to report directly to a field assignment, then you're going to check in with your immediate supervisor, your immediate field supervisor, once you arrive. You're going to receive a briefing from your immediate supervisor, the finance section chief in this case, and you'll probably receive general incident orientation information. When you check in, you're going to get information about your lodging, meals, per diem, the hours of operation, what accounts to charge from People Plus. You may even get information about laundry services and food services if they're being supplied at the incident. You might acquire specific work material. You may be issued a laptop computer and or a cell phone, or you may have been instructed to bring those items from your region. If in doubt, ask before you go. Like I said, call the REOC manager in your region or find out who the finance section chief is or the cost unit leader and call the person that's already in the field because they'll be able to give you a lot of good information. Other common responsibilities are that all supervisors shall maintain accountability for their assigned personnel with regard to their exact location for personal safety and welfare at all times. Now, I'm telling you this because if you have field accountants working for you, then you would need to keep track of the field accountants on a daily basis and know exactly what locations each field accountant is going to at all times. You're always expected to sign in first thing in the morning and out at the end of the day. It's part of ICS. It's used for safety and for cost projections, and it's in accordance with the OCFO Emergency Management Accounting Policy. You'll be expected to participate in incident management team meetings and briefings as appropriate. For instance, the first big meeting of the day is the operations briefing. It's an all-hands meeting. It's usually around 7 a.m., and you're always expected to be there. This is going to be in the same location most likely as the sign-in, sign-out logs to make it convenient so we can catch people as they come and go. Other meetings that you might be expected to attend, there might be a daily finance call with the host region comptroller staff every day or the host region contracting staff every day. These would be important for you to participate in, as well as the finance section, which would probably be on a daily basis. The rule of thumb is that the newer the incident, the more meetings you're going to have to attend. So you just go with it. You just go with the flow, but it's a great way to you get a lot of good information, so don't skip meetings. They're important. Next slide, please. I believe we're at slide 13 now. Other common ICS responsibilities, you'll be expected to ensure compliance with all safety practices and procedures and, of course, report unsafe conditions to the safety officer. Everyone has to go through a safety briefing when you get activated to the field. It's important. Keep in mind, people are rushed, they're stressed, and they're working long hours. These are all prime catalysts for some type of accident. Safety is extremely important at an incident, so don't skip the safety meeting. Know your muster point, for instance. If the incident command post is the finance section going to meet by the red tent at the corner of the parking lot? Are we going to meet by the blue trailer? Know your muster point for your section. Supervisors are responsible for organizing and briefing staff. You might be briefing the field accountants, but this will probably be under the finance section chief, to be honest. Know your assigned communication methods and procedures for your area of responsibility and ensure that communication equipment is operating properly. Make a list of the most used phone numbers for the finance section. This is probably going to be like the comptrollers across the country, People Plus contacts across the country. Get their email addresses. And be aware of any potential communication problems. For instance, early on in an event, it's quite likely that cell phone service is going to be really spotty. So emails may be the best way to communicate. You may also be required to send all emails through a position-specific mailbox. This is not a requirement of ICS or of EPA, but in some of the most recent events that we've had in the last few years, The documentation unit has requested that we set up incident-specific and position-specific mailboxes. So every piece of business would be tracked going in and out of finance. And that's a great way to document document what's going on. It's great for historical purposes. It's great for when you're audited. But keep in mind, any emails in a position-specific mailbox cannot be deleted. So you want to keep it on a professional level. But you're always going to, somebody's always going to slip up and say, I'll meet you at 11 o'clock for lunch by the car. That's just not a big deal. Those things always happen. But for the most part, try to keep it on a professional business level when you're in the position-specific mailbox. You're going to need to complete forms and reports required of the assigned position. In this case, it would most likely be the 214, the daily activity log. Next slide. A lot of these common responsibilities are just logic, things everybody knows, but they're just good to reiterate. You're going to return all assigned equipment to the appropriate location in good working order. And if it's not functioning properly, then you need to tell somebody. For instance, if you get a cell phone with a box and a cord and a charger, then you need to turn it back in with a box and a cord and a charger. Everything that comes in some kind of packaging or box needs to go back in that box because most of this stuff's going to have to be shipped back to FEMA or back to a regional office. So we need to keep packing, keep the packing equipment. Complete demobilization checkout process before returning to the home office. Never just pack up and leave. This causes major problems for lodging. We don't know how many hotel rooms we should pay for that night. It causes problems in estimating meal cost, in resources. We might think we have more resources available than we actually do. It causes our burn rate to be inaccurate, and it's potentially a safety issue. If someone's worked 12 hours and they decide that at the end of the day they're going to pack it up because it's the end of their rotation and they're going to drive 8 hours home, that becomes a real safety issue. So you never just leave. You always go through the demobilization checkout process. You respond to the demobilization orders and brief your replacement. Moving in and out is an important part of the incident command system, and there are very specific processes involved. Each member of the IMT is expected to go through a demobilization process whenever you're working in the field or in the REOC. At rotation changes, you're going to brief the incoming staff or you're going to receive a briefing from the outgoing staff. And I consider this sort of like a data dump. It's like the Vulcan mind meld. Remember in Star Trek when Mr. Spock would put his forehead against the other person's forehead and he would suck out all that knowledge. He would learn everything that person knew. So anything that's going to help you do your job better is the kind of information you're hoping that your predecessor is going to impart. And this is the kind of information you're going to need to give the person who is backfilling behind you.
I'm going to interrupt. We do have a question that came in online in reference to the idea of having to save the materials when you receive equipment. They specifically wanted to know where you would store all of this packaging materials during emergencies, since it seems like space may be limited.
Space is limited, but it's not that big a deal. If you would get packing, it would probably be for a cell phone. It wouldn't be for a computer. If you are issued a computer or a laptop at the location, that packing would all be maintained by the IT people that issued the equipment to you. I don't think they'd trust us with that. So I really don't think there would ever be an issue of that much to maintain.
Okay, thanks so much. Appreciate it. And just a reminder, any comments or questions, if you're on the phone, you can take yourselves off of mute by hitting #6 and ask them directly, or you can use that question mark icon above the slides to submit them at any time. Thanks very much.
Okay, we're about done here. You need to maintain your 214, your daily activity log. This is going to be very helpful for your replacement also, and it's going to provide historic documentation of just what work is going on at the incident. It's going to let your replacement know what the landmines are, what issues continue to recur, what are the problems you're having to deal with on a regular basis. So this is going to be a very helpful document to maintain. You may also, if you're lucky, get a playbook when you rotate in. A playbook is something that we started using during Hurricane Katrina, and each section develops their own playbook. It's just a handy tool. If it had to have a title, it would probably be Daily Life in Finance, during the day and during the night or something like that. It gives you, it's just a variety of pieces of miscellaneous information that will help your day go smoother. It might have account numbers and phone numbers. It would have maps where the field accountants would be going out to on a regular basis. It would have room number locations where your offices are located. It might have the meetings listed and the meeting times. It might have information about hotels in the area, restaurants in the area if there are any open. It might give you information about things like that, just some really basic daily information to make your life a little easier. So those are the kind of common responsibilities that you're going to be looking at if you get activated, and some of the documentation that you'll be expected to maintain. Are there any questions at this point? If not, we're moving along to John Anderson, I believe.
Yes. Good afternoon. It's at least afternoon here in Kansas City. And I am going to the next slide, which should be slide number 15, and at the top it should say Unit Leader Responsibilities. And under that, the first thing you need to do is determine resource needs and order replenish or no status of orders. The worst thing you can do, or one of the worst things you can do, is run out of the basic supplies that you need. Many groups look to finance for their basic office supplies. So try to have plenty on stock, because you'll periodically get raided, and some of that may happen after you're gone for the day. So you may have 50 file folders when you leave at night and only 20 when you come in the morning. So just need to keep an eye on your office supplies. Next thing is determine the current status of the unit activities. And one good source for that is the 214 or the unit activity log. Obviously, your finance section chief giving you your in briefing will be another great source. And then a third good source is that playbook that Cindy mentioned. If there's one available, those can be invaluable. And if nothing else, it will highlight some of the perhaps unique things. There may be some unique forms that are required, or the documentation that you get from the contractor may be very different from what you're used to seeing. So there could be some unique forms and things like that, and those hopefully will be highlighted in the playbook for you. Make sure that you assign duties to the unit staff. You can't do it all yourself. You'll kill yourself if you try. So make sure that you delegate and get the jobs out there to the staff. That's why they're there. They're more than willing to help you with all those duties. Implement safety and security measures. Again, I think Cindy's talked about it a little bit previously, but the field accountants are going to be out there. There's a good chance that they will do a circuit over a period of days, 3, 4, 5 days out in the field. They may be visiting multiple field locations, so you should have a fairly good idea of where they will be, what day. Make sure you absolutely have a cell phone number for them. And it's a good idea to have a fairly good idea of what route they're going to take. And we'll talk about that a little bit later as well. Next thing is supervise demobilization of the unit. You need to be sure that everything that you were given gets returned when you demobilize. Direct volunteer inquiries to resource unit leader. It's not your job to deal with it. Send them to the resource unit leader. Understand the 213RR process. And again, this varies slightly from the normal ICS process. This is specific to EPA. But the good news is, if you have the multi-part forms, it is on the back page of that form for you to refer to. Next slide, please. I believe we're on slide 16. And it should say cost unit leader responsibilities at the top. I think I mentioned briefly before, and Cindy's talked about it too, is obtain that briefing from the finance section chief. And that's one of the things you want to do very shortly after you arrive on scene and check in. You want to check in with your finance section chief, so that he or she knows that you're there and can start briefing you and giving you assignments, I can almost guarantee you there's going to be a hot topic that he or she wants you to work on. Determine resource needs within the unit. We talked about that a little bit too. Resources are beyond just those supplies and equipment. Resources are folks too. And you need to be aware of what's going on at the incident and whether they're ramping up or ramping down. If they're ramping up, obviously you may want to order some resources, and especially if it's a large incident and people are coming from multiple locations or multiple regions, people don't get there overnight. It may take 3 or 4 days or more to get the right person with the right skill set in there. So don't wait until last minute to order resources when you're ramping up, or you'll find yourself short of staff and working 20-hour days to try to keep up with everything. So it's just important to plan ahead and know where your resources are and what the upcoming needs are and whether you can ramp up or ramp down. Coordinate with the host region and headquarters on cost reporting procedures. Again, Cindy at least talked about coordinating with the host region, and that's very, very important because there are going to be people in the host region that are processing much of the documents that we need for our jobs. And if we get a new account code, we transition from one mission assignment to another, that will cause us to move from one account to another. We need to be sure that everybody's on the same page and that the right accounts are getting on the documents and that the documents are being maintained in a good order. Same thing with headquarters. Again, each incident is unique and has its own requirements. In the BP incident, Lisa Jackson was very involved in that. And at least when I worked in Region 6, we did a daily report that went up to Lisa Jackson so that she had the up-to-date cost figures, that if she was having a media briefing or someone maybe just stuck a microphone in her face, when she was on site, she would be apprised of where we were at monetarily on the incident. So it's very important to coordinate with headquarters and the host region. Obtain and record all cost data. I mean, this is the bread and butter of this position. This is the main thing that the cost unit leader is doing, is obtaining those records, again, from a variety of sources, and we'll talk about that a little more in a few minutes, but make sure that they're recorded and that that data is passed along to the people that need it. And then prepare incident cost summaries, and Jim's going to show you some examples of these incident cost summaries in a few minutes, so you'll get some real detail on that. Next slide, please. All right, and I believe we're on slide 17 now. The next item talked about is prepare resource use cost estimates for planning. That's really your burn rates that you want to do on a daily basis, and you want to not only say that we're using X amount of dollars, but you want to divide that into your balance so that that projects out that not only are we using X amount of dollars per day, but at the current rate, we expect that to last us 10 more days or whatever the time frame is that's left. And that becomes very important, and again, we'll talk about it a little more in a bit, but making sure that we request funding timely. Make recommendations for cost savings to the finance section chief. As part of our duties, we're seeing a lot of documentation come in from a lot of sources, multiple vendors, multiple contractors. We may see duplication where two people are assigned to do the same thing. We're going to certainly want to let the finance section chief know that, who's going to probably let operations and the IC know it so that we can eliminate that duplication or at least question it. There may be a valid reason, but anything like that, we're going to want to send up the chain. Or we may see the two vendors are supplying the same resources, and one is much more inexpensive than the other. Well, obviously, if we're getting the same thing from two different sources and we can get it from the get additional units from the cheaper source, we obviously ought to do it. Maintain cumulative incident cost records. And again, I want to stress cumulative. Everything is cumulative to date, or at least on the mission assignment or the PERFA. And ensure that all cost documents are accurately prepared. Again, accuracy is a key here. Being anal is a good thing when you're an accountant. We just need to be very, very accurate with all the information because it is used by the incident commander and operations to make decisions, and it is used by agency management to brief the media or even the incident commander, some of the other folks on the incident may be using the numbers we supply to go to the media. And we just need to be accurate and make sure those are absolutely correct. Next slide, please. And again, I believe we're on slide 18 now. Complete all paperwork before demobilization. You know, once you go back to your normal routine, you're not going to be thinking of the incident so much, and you're going to need to make sure that that documentation that you've needed to complete is not only completed, but as Cindy mentioned before, it needs to go to the documentation unit. And documentation nowadays is not just paper. Yes, we all get a lot of paper as part of that process, but much of the information also comes to us electronically, and you will either have a thumb drive or some sort of electronic media that you may store that documentation on. Again, that needs to get transferred to the documentation unit before you leave the incident. Provide reports to the FSC. Obviously, we need to keep the finance section chief updated on all the key happenings in the incident. So if we get a new mission assignment, we need to make sure that the finance section chief is aware of that, because that will in turn cause us to establish a new account number. Again, the finance section chief needs to be aware of it so that they can let the incident commander and the other command staff be aware of that. They also need to get that information to the payroll folks so that either out in the regions or on site, so that as they're assisting people with their timesheets, the right account information is getting on there. And maintain the unit activity log, and we've talked about that before. It's ICS Form 214. That is a daily requirement. The cost unit will be one component of the finance unit activity log, so we need to make sure that that's up to date, because people coming in behind us are going to need that so that they can catch up and make sure they know what's gone on. It may become very important to know what day certain functions or things were done, and again, this is part of the documentation that goes to the documentation unit. If there's a court case or something like that, all this documentation becomes very important. And it's just critical that we write down contemporaneous and have that available for future people that's going to be working on the site. All right, next slide, please. I believe this is slide 19 that we're on. We're talking about key responsibilities and products. And it's very important that the cost unit leader keep updated costs, which is utilized versus budgeted. And again, Jim Miller is going to talk to you about that here in a little bit and show you some real life examples of this that I believe you all will find helpful. And we have both intramural is payroll and travel, and extramural expenses like contracts, small purchases, miscellaneous things, supplies that will be used. And again, these are things that Cindy talked about before, the financial status report for the SITREP or situation report, support for the IAP for the next operational period. And what that is the finance section chief, along with the rest of the command and general staff, will be in a afternoon meeting generally, and they are asked to support operations for the next operational period, and that may be one or more days. And the finance section chief is going to have to give a thumbs up or a thumbs down that there are sufficient finances to allow these operations to continue. And I can tell you, when I was assigned to Katrina, one of the tours that I did down there, I was probably on site for about 2 hours before I got pulled into the meeting where I had to approve or disapprove or support or not support the operation plan. And in fact, the Inspector General was sitting right behind me, and they were trying to do a two-day plan, and we were working on both Katrina and Rita at the time. And there was sufficient resources for 2 days at Katrina, but there was not for Rita. But being they were combined, I could not support the plan. And I spent about the next 6 hours explaining to numerous people why I couldn't support the plan and why the numbers were the way they were. So having sat through that and knowing how uncomfortable that can become, it's really important to know the numbers. You're going to have to defend them to not only the incident commander, but the chief federal officer, and there's just a whole bunch of people that are going to want to know why these numbers are that way and how this could have happened. So you absolutely have to know the numbers. And the next thing is determine if additional funding should be requested. Again, this process generally does not happen overnight. They're going to need several days lead time working through the Joint Field Office, through the incident commander, to request and then get approval of additional funds. So it's very important that we know well in advance that we're running out of funds and that we need to request additional funds. Next slide, please. Again, I believe we're on slide 20 here, and we're talking about key responsibilities and products for the cost unit leader. Cost tracking, I mean, that's what we do. And again, Cindy mentioned earlier that each incident commander is unique and have their own likes and dislikes. Some would like to see this in narrative. Some would like to see it in table format. Others prefer charts. And you're going to have to work with your finance section chief to find out what works best for your incident commander and the incident management team so that we get the right information in the right format to the people in a timely basis so that they can make the correct decisions based on the financial position. Ensuring account codes are set up and made available when needed for documentation, such as a mission assignment and account code summary. An account code summary is a very simple document. It's a one-page document that just lists all the account codes by mission assignment, or again, it would be for a PERFA. but it is very helpful to people. I know I provided one in an exercise one time to one of our incident commanders, and he asked if that was something I routinely did, and I said yes. I mean, that's the way I'd been trained to do it when I worked in Region 6. He said he had never seen one before, and he found it incredibly helpful. So little things like that can be very helpful to very busy people like the incident commander. So sometimes what seems like a very small or trivial thing or just paperwork can be vital to other people. So it's just really important to keep that updated. Next item is assuring that the FSC or finance section chief is kept abreast of current financial issues and expenditures. Again, we've talked about that, but it's critical that either they have the right information to be able to support the operational plan on a daily basis or to provide proper account numbers to folks that are either just coming on site or starting a new activity. And next slide, please. And I believe this is slide 21, and we're still talking about key responsibilities and products for the cost unit leader. Coordinate with field accountants, deploy to various locations, and we need to know this for a variety of reasons. Again, Cindy touched upon it earlier, but we need to know for accountability reasons. We need to know what resources for our burn rates and our projections. For safety reasons, we need to know where folks are and what they're doing, again, so that we get our burn rates and our cost projections correct. And, you know, these are people, the field accountants are traveling many times over back roads to remote locations. We really need to know where they are, where they plan on being each day, and what possible routes they may take. Because, again, as Cindy talked about earlier, is people often work very long days. They get tired. It's pretty easy to fall asleep behind the wheel and end up in the ditch. And if we're not in communication and we don't know where they are and where they should be, we don't know whether we need to send out help and send somebody looking for them, or, you know, maybe they're where they need to be, but we need to, for sure, keep track of these folks, touch base with them, even if it's just how are things going, do you need anything, to ensure that they aren't in a ditch somewhere and need help. And, again, I said, you know, if we know their planned route, if something does happen, we can let emergency responders know where to start looking for these folks. Next slide, please. We're talking about now general tasks of the cost unit leader. And the following is a general task list that should be completed as soon as possible after arriving at the incident. Complete boilerplate reports as well as determining other needed reports unique to the event. I believe each region or each location may have some of their own boilerplate reports. I don't think we have any national boilerplates at this point, but I believe that's something that this group, being Cindy, Jim, and myself, and Roberta, may work on. And once we establish those should be posted out on the web with the resources that they've already talked about and that we'll talk again about at the end of this presentation. The next thing would be obtain a briefing from the finance section chief about special concerns and fiscal limitations. Again, each incident is unique. Each incident commander is unique, and we need to make sure we put the information in a format that they can absorb quickly or that they can look at in a glance and get the information that they need. So that's where you're going to get that kind of information. Your finance section chief has a lot of daily interaction with the incident commander, and he or she will know what is helpful and what is not helpful to that incident commander so that we can get them the right information in the right format. And next slide, please. I believe this is slide 23, and we're continuing our conversation on general tasks. Keep the finance section chief updated on significant daily events. Again, if we get information that we're either ramping up or ramping down, we've got a new mission assignment, we've gotten additional funding in, whatever that is, the finance section chief needs to be aware of it because he or she is advising the incident commander and the operation folks on the finances of the incident, and they have to know to be able to give the correct information. Something that's pretty mundane but is established work area, hopefully you're going to be located to the procurement folks, that you're close to the payroll folks, that you have all the supplies you need. You're going to need a calculator. You're going to need a computer. You're going to need to be producing a lot of spreadsheets. You're going to need access to a printer, maybe a color printer, because the incident commander likes to see pie charts. So color is helpful in those kinds of things. Make contacts with personnel that have information needed. Again, Cindy referred to, or I believe she did, contacts in the regions. You'll need a contact for people plus folks in every region, so to make sure that they have the account numbers. You can set those up in assets that are responding to the incident so they can have those on their timesheet. There's headquarters folks and the host region folks that we probably need to coordinate with. So just having those contact names and perhaps times that's best to call them is very helpful. Next thing here is to maintain written documentation on unit activities and issues. Again, we've got to get everything documented because if this or when this goes to court or GAO, OPM, there's going to be people coming in looking over our shoulders. We need to have everything documented and up to date. And I believe that is the end of my part of the presentation. I'll entertain any questions at this point. And if there are no questions, we'll turn it over to Jim Miller.
Again, a reminder for those of you on the phones, if you have a question, you can simply hit #6 to take yourself off of mute and ask a question out loud. I don't see any questions that came in online, so with that, I think we can go ahead and segue on to the next set of materials.
All right. We'll now move into the area and try and touch on some daily duties of the cost unit leader. Before I go there, I want to stress a couple of things that certainly have been mentioned, and we are on slide 24. I don't think you can overstate the importance of this position in respect to the incident. It is key to have funding to be able to address everything that's going on at the incident, and that's the important aspect of this position, is maintaining adequate funding so that can be done. Also, it's already been stated, and I will restate here, you need to be flexible. Obviously, you report as a cost unit leader to the finance section chief, who reports to the incident commander. If you're involved in a rotational aspect to this, you may report to different finance section chiefs and different incident commanders over the course of the incident. So you have to meet their needs in relation to what each of them need from a financial standpoint able to keep the incident moving. I also like to stress the fact that there are two staff level positions reporting under here as well, the field accountant, which may be one or more people, and then the funds control official, which, as it said, will probably be back in the regional office, may be in the REOC or may simply be serving their regular position back there. You will need to be certainly in contact with that person probably on a daily basis. So with that, let me move on into the slide part. The first bullet there says comply with requirements of the IMT. That's certainly what Cindy and John have been covering here in addressing the common responsibilities and certainly the specific responsibility cost unit leader. The common responsibilities can be found in Chapter 3 in the Incident Management Handbook, and the cost unit leader responsibilities can be found in Chapter 12 of the Incident Management Handbook. And also very important to the requirements of the IMT are the briefings and the meetings that Cindy referred to earlier. And these can be, more information can be found out about those in Chapter 4 of the Incident Management Handbook. The first thing it addresses here is the sign-in, sign-out sheet, which is very important. It's incumbent upon you to know all the resources that are being used on the incident that are costing money, because you need to track all of that. But sometimes we get a little confused. There are actually two sign-in documents, if you will. There's a check-in and out document that's maintained that when you actually deploy to the field or to the REOC, you will sign in on the check-in sheet. Resource unit uses this to create T-cards and track all the resources that are deployed, whether it's people or equipment. And then there's the actual daily sign-in, sign-out sheet, which hours are tracked, and it's incumbent upon you. If there's not a time unit leader, if there's a time unit leader, they'll be making sure these sheets are available. Those sheets you will use to make sure accurate costs are being tracked. And another important document, after Katrina, there was a lot of hot washing going on and looking at what was done, and from a financial standpoint as well as an operation planning standpoint and all. But there was a document created that can be found on the OCFO webpage. It's Resource Management Number 2540-16-E1. And it has a lot of financial information, but one of the things that it added, and there was a lot of back and forth on this as to whether we would include it or not include it, but it is part of the directive is an emergency management time card. One of the things we have to do at the end of all of this when we are trying to get reimbursed from FEMA for all of these costs or Coast Guard or whoever it is to have, provide documentation for all the costs that are out there. And, of course, this timesheet will help do that as well as it will help managers back at home who are having approved People Plus without knowledge of what's going on in the field, help them feel more comfortable about doing that. So again, tracking costs on a daily basis and complying with all the requirements of the incident management team. The next bullet is referred to the IAP, which is the Incident Action Plan for upcoming operating period. The period normally starts out on a 24-hour basis, so there's an IAP prepared every day by planning based on the information that operations gives them. And you will need copies of that to make sure, again, that where there's new resources being brought in, that you're going to get them captured in all the reports and things that you are doing to track those costs. Under that, you need to update required daily reports. Here it says update. Of course, if you're the first cost unit leader to report, you're going to be the one developing these. And then people, as they rotate in and out, will certainly be doing the updating. Again, you need to be flexible. You need to provide the information that the incident commander and the REOC need to do their job. And, of course, one of the briefings that you'll go through that we talked about a little bit before when you report on and find out what all these daily reports are. Again, if you're the first one there, you'll find that information out from the finance section chief. If you're replacing another cost unit leader, then certainly you'll have a conversation with them and the finance section chief to determine what all daily reports are being provided. Again, here's compare the T-cards, which I mentioned just a little minute ago. The resource unit maintains these. Again, they track all the resources, whether it's people or equipment. There is a card there. They're maintained where you can see them all from all of them that are active and currently on site or deployed. And for any that have demo, those cards will be maintained in a demo file. So you need to keep track of that, need to balance that against the check-in, check-out list, the sign-in, sign-out list, and just make sure that you have accurate information and that you are tracking costs on everything that's being used. Prepare payroll cost projections. This is important in that for most of the other costs that you'll be tracking, you'll have a system, whether it be RCMS or IFMS or Financial Data Warehouse, where you can go and get some pretty accurate real-time information out of it. If you don't have the actual expenditures, you'll at least have the either the commitment or the obligation information. Payroll cost is a little different in that the information is there in Financial Data Warehouse, but it's 2 weeks in arrears. So you don't have real-time data there. If the incident has been going along and staff has been maintained at a fairly constant level, then you could project based on what you've already used. But if you're fluctuating either up or down in the equipment or people that are being used, then it may be incumbent for you to actually track this and know what's going on so you'll have, you know, real data to report because it is 2 weeks behind coming out of the system. You will need to prepare daily cost reports and submit them to the planning section for the situation report, or as we refer to it as the SITREP. And this information tracks the incident action plan, so it is normally done on a daily basis as long as IAP is being done daily. But it, further into the incident you go, that IAP may slide as well, may be done every other day, you know, every 3 days or once a week. But the financial information will need to track that as well. You'll also need to provide that information to the REOC. And basically what you'll need from a bare minimum in this report is the funds received to date, the funds obligated and or spent to date, and then the funds that are available for future costs. Of course, this will be directed to you by the incident commander as to what information they want provided in this situation report. I know during Deepwater, there were three different reports going in, one from Region 4, one from Region 6, and one from headquarters, which there was a headquarters EOC set up and running. Headquarters decided that it would be good if we all reported basically the same thing, so when somebody looked at information, they would be seeing the same thing from all three of us. So not only do you have to be concerned with your REOC and your incident commander, sometimes there's a headquarters element to it as well. And again, you'll be tracking basically four categories of costs. It'll be salaries, travel, expenses, and contracts. It could be that you could get into some grant costs, but I've never seen that happen. All right, moving on to slide 25. And here's where we, again, talk about the unit personnel, disseminate information to unit personnel on a daily basis. Those that would make up your unit would be the field accountants and the funds control official. And, of course, the size of the incident is going to dictate the number of staff deployed. It is conceivable, and I have been in that situation where I'm serving as the finance section chief and doing all the cost leader information as well. You would brief the finance section chief on any significant issues. You would also need to document this in the unit log so that whoever comes in behind you will have a history of what's been going on and any significant issues that have been dealt with and how they were dealt with. And then, of course, you refer to the ICS 215, which is the operational planning worksheet that documents all the resources that are needed for the operating period. And again, here, making sure you do have control on everything that's being used, whether it's people or equipment, so that you know that you are tracking those costs. Right, moving on to slide 26. Some of the forms that are used by the cost unit leader are listed here. The assignment list, the status change, the check-in information, the 213RR resource order form that John referred to earlier is a multi-part form and is critical. It does flow through the finance section chief for his signature to verify that there are funds to procure whatever is being requested. Again, whether it's people or equipment. The 214 daily activity and the 220 demo form. All of the EPA modified forms can be found in Chapter 5 of the Incident Management Handbook, and all of the forms can be found on the AOS website, and the link to that website will be provided prone in the presentation. The only form that's not available on there is the 213RR because, as we said, it is a multi-part form for each person that signs it. There's a sheet there for them to keep for their records. So you would need to get that from your incident management team and make sure that those are available to you in the field and that there's lots of them. Notes at the bottom here, the cost must maintain resource name, unit, time on scene, hours worked per day, demo time, and the date from the time unit leader. Again, the T-cards, they track all this information in that. You're just cross-referencing with the time unit leader and the resource unit leader on all of this. And then again, add personnel and equipment resources to the master database and compute information, validate ceilings, and provide estimated burn rate. Again, you're tracking all the daily costs, keeping the IC through the FSC up to date on the financial aspect of the incident so that, as John referred to earlier, they can agree each day that the funds are available to keep the incident moving. Moving on to slide 27, again here talking about incident ceiling management. The cost unit leader and the fund certifying official are responsible for ensuring adequate funding. And the cost unit leader, overall funding, knowing what's coming in, what's being spent, when we need to request additional funds from FEMA or Coast Guard or whoever we're getting our funds, knowing when we need to be adding more money to contracts, when we need to be adding more money to interagency agreements, whatever funding mechanisms we have in place, knowing the status of all of those at all times, and keeping the finance section chief and the IC aware of what's going on. The fund certifying official is basically performing the job that they do every day in their position, and that is all the procuring documents, whether it's a commitment notice for an IA or whether it's a PR for a contract or for a small purchase or whatever, ensuring that the funds get committed in the system and a document control number gets placed on that. Again, each region will have their own system for doing all of that, for creating numbers. Those numbers will be in conjunction with mission assignment or whatever kind of document is being used for funding. It also will require knowing the funding source and the amount of funds available in each source. Normally, we're working under mission assignments in FEMA if it's a emergency situation. The other possibility would be interagency agreements. I know during Katrina, the Coast Guard was task a ESF-3 assignment, but yet they wanted us to do it for them. So they were actually given the mission assignment and the funding, but then they provided us the funding through IA. And you may be doing the same thing. We with all of the mission assignments we get, we quite often, pretty much every time, provide funds to the Coast Guard to support us as well. During the Deepwater Horizon spill, we actually worked under a PERFA, first time we had ever done it here in Region 4. A PERFA is called a Pollution Removal Funding Authorization, and it was actually the Coast Guard, you know, was in charge of the incident, and they had tasked us to do certain things and provided us the funding through the PERFA mechanism. Whatever the mechanism, it's our job as the cost unit leader to monitor the burn rate and to request ceiling adjustment as required. And like I said, this could be a ceiling adjustment, actually asking for more money either through the mission assignment or through the IA of funds coming to us, or the same thing with funds going out to our contractors and other agencies that are supporting us. Moving on to slide 28. Again, we've talked about all the reports that we have to do. The importance of those reports, like John touched on earlier, certainly we have to withstand an audit at the end. So all of these reports must be understandable. They must be accurate. They must be consistent. They must capture all the costs. And again, they must be audit proof. And I say again, we have to provide through the finance section chief to the incident commander whatever information they need to manage the incident from a financial standpoint. Moving on to slide 29. Again, the financial summary reports must answer all of these questions. Who, the what, the where, the when, the why, and the how much. They've got to provide all that information. And I know all of the incident commanders I've worked with are not bashful for asking things. If they have a need for something, you'll know it. Moving on to slide 30. Here we get into some of the sample reports. This one is a basic burn rate report. Again, you can get it as simple or as sophisticated as you need to with these reports. It's all about providing the information that's needed. But at a minimum, like this report, this is for Hurricane Katrina and Rita. It's a Region 6 report that was used. It shows in the graphics there, the mission assignments, as you'll see, quite often you have more than one mission assignment. You're tracking all of them, and you're having to keep them all separate. If you're using the contractor across different mission assignments, then you'll have different delivery orders or task orders associated with each of those mission assignments for each contractor. So, again, it can be very simple or it can be very complicated. But the information you will track will be the amount of money you've received, which is the funded column, the amount of money you've obligated, which is the obligations column, and that would include your expenditures as well, and then the amount available. And the burn rate, in its simplest form, is basically dividing the amount of money that's available, or excuse me, the amount of money that has been spent by the number of days that you've been operating. On the far end of that, though, you can could be tracking each and every individual contract, all your salary, and providing an actual daily expenditure for each of those and providing that. But that's much more complicated. Taking that one more column, you can take the daily burn rate, divide the amount available by that, and that'll give you the amount of money you have left, and it'll show you how many more days you can keep the incident running. That's where you judge when you need to ask for more money. Moving on to slide 31 is the same information. It's just for the mission assignments for Rita. So, again, here you have multiple incidents, you have multiple mission assignments, and you're tracking all of that information. This is basically a burn rate, and would be information that would be sent back to the planning unit and the REOC to be included in the SIP rep. The SIP rep, when it goes online, is available to anybody that has access to it, so questions can arise based on the information you have in there. Moving on to slide 32, again, dealing with cost ceiling management. It says the following slides show examples of EPA ceiling management. Again, here, the flexibility part, some ICs and managers like to see things in pictures. They like color. They want it in pie charts or graphs or whatever, where other people are just happy with a spreadsheet with the basic information in it. There are various formats that can be used, and as Cindy said earlier, that's one of the reasons you need to have a good knowledge of Excel to be able to provide the information in the format that your incident commander wants to see it. Moving on to slide 33, here's an example of a ceiling report, very much like the burn rate report we showed. Just in the basic information there, it shows the ceiling of the mission assignment, MA, $194,500,000. And these are real numbers to give you a perspective on what you can be dealing with out there. It breaks it out into intramural costs and extramural costs, and then shows the available amount. And then there's a pie chart showing the same information. And again, like I said, you would work with your finance section chief and the incident commander to provide what they need to best manage the incident. And you work with the REOC or the planning section chief, again, to provide what is needed for the SITREP. Again, it could be either way in the SITREP as well. Like some of them want graphs and colors and things, where others are perfectly happy with just the basic information. Moving on to slide 34. This actually is a daily status report that is provided by a contractor to the cost unit leader. This comes, again, out of Region 6, one of their ERRs, Emergency Response and Removal Contracts. You can see there that it tracks five different task orders, which is what TO stands for in the first column. And it shows the ceiling for each of those task orders, the total cost to date, the remaining funds, the daily burn rate, and then the number of days remaining, which I went through earlier in the burn rate one as well. One of the things they add here, you can see the top two task orders, number one and two, are closed out. They're no longer in existence. That's why it says not applicable for number of remaining days. But then for 3, 4, and 5, not only do they show the number of days, they actually give a date that shows when there's enough money to get through those dates. Very vital information.
We had a question that came in online.
Okay.
And they asked, out of Region 10, how long does it take to get additional funds?
It varies. You better plan, I'd say, no less than a week if you're in the field, because the process it has to go through, the signatures, if it's a FEMA incident, you're going to have state concurrence because different mission assignments, at least one of which requires a state cost share, so when you're requesting more money, the state's going to have to sign off on it. It's got to go through FEMA. Different levels of management there, so you're probably pushing it with a week, but again, look at how much you have available, know what your burn rate is, and react accordingly.
Jim, plus remind them that a piece of that that's often overlooked is once we get the money in, we still have to get reimbursable authority from the
members. So
that's another day or two.
Yeah, because the agency only has two for the year, a certain amount of reimbursable authority. And if we exceed that, then that's another hurdle you're going to have to go through to get that in. But you're right, when we get the money, it has to go through Cincinnati for them to process it, and then actually, eventually, it'll get in IFMS and be there for us ready to use. So I certainly would say a minimum of a week, but that's probably way too conservative. Continuing on with the status it refers to there under number two in this, 1955 status details. 1955, for those of you who do not know, is the form that's prepared daily by the contractors and submitted to us. It has all the information. Of course, it's signed by the contractor and signed by an EPA representative, normally a OSC. You can use other federal agencies such as the Coast Guard or the Corps of Engineers. If they're engaged, they could also sign off on them as well. But track through this information is several pages. Slide 35 is the continuation. It tracks for Task Order 56, which is the larger task order, which was $15.3 million. It shows the work activities going on. Current task, HHW, which is household hazardous waste, the collection and dispositioning of that. The other task, white goods, is the collection of refrigerators, freezers, washing machines, things like that. Some of those, you know, have to go through a process of getting oil or Freon or whatever out of them. Different things, the recovery group, people that go around recovering all of this. Just listing out all the tasks and what's being done. Proceeding on to slide 36. It's the resources provided. It's just a summary of all the resources that are being provided for that task order. You can see that's broken out by division and, you know, by function that they're providing. Then it gives an overall summary of the cost. Again, the total accumulated cost and the daily cost. And then establishes some burn rates there and then shows the estimate of cost for 2 days of work. And that's carried over into slide 37, which brings it all to a close with the basic information that you'll be needing to include in your reports. And then also it gives an idea there of what available other resources they have that could be provided if you need them. So with that, I think that's the conclusion of my part here on the daily duties. Again, if there's any questions, be glad to take them.
We had another question that came in also from Region 10, and they asked, does the home region request the reimbursable authority?
Yes, that is correct. And that's all done through Cincinnati, the CFC, the Cincinnati Finance Center.
Okay, and those of you on the phone lines, you can hit #6 if you have any questions for the from the phones.
This is Vince Saunders, Region 5.
Go ahead.
Just have a question on the burn rate report in terms of format. When you get the mission assignments in, will they be broken down will they be defined by salary, travel, expenses, contracts, or is that something that we'll have to do ourselves?
Do it yourself.
Okay.
You'll get a lump of money in, and then you have to decide where you want it placed, you know, which of the budget object classes, 10, 28, 36, 37, 41, that you want it, and you'll do that through your budget people back in the office. And that ties in with the requesting the reimbursable authority as well.
Very good. Thank you.
I was going to mention, Jim, usually there's some coordination with the budget shop, Richard Blackman's folks, as well as Cincinnati there.
Okay. Good point.
All right. If we're ready to move on to slide 38, if there's no more questions, and I can start to talk to you a little bit about EPA financial systems. And it says here, provides cost information such as payroll. And there's a note there that tells you payroll is 2 weeks delayed and travel expenditures. And 2 weeks is a minimum on the payroll. Travel is usually updated at least every day, so that's much more current. So when Cindy and Jim talked about cost projections, we really need to do good cost projections for the payroll, because it is at least 2 weeks before we actually see that hit the system. And of course, this cost information is used for calculating burn rates, and I think Jim did a very good job of explaining that, so, and showed you some examples there. All right, let's move on to the next slide, which is slide number 39. And we're going to talk about RCMS, or Removal Cost Management System. And I think we briefly mentioned this before, but we need to talk about it a little more in depth, which RCMS has three modules. There's a cost tracking module. And in the cost tracking module, what that will do is it will outline the person's specialty, be it an engineer, or a scientist, an accountant, whatever, their pay rate, their hourly rate, and therefore we can use that to make very specific cost projections. Because if we know that Joe Blow costs us $53.47 per hour and he works 12 hours a day, RCMS will calculate that out for us and come up with an exact amount so that our payroll projections will be very precise. The next thing is a cost projection module, and that's exactly what I just kind of described a little bit, is not only will it track the daily cost, but you can project that out for a day or a number of days, so that you can kind of do a what-if scenario. And then an invoicing module. And I believe Jim talked about that a little bit before, in that our contractors can use this invoicing module to produce these 1955s, and again, Jim showed you an example of some of that. Additional training on RCMS is recommended, and again, Cindy mentioned the help desk and the online training or information that's available to you. Also, my experience on some of the larger incidents, especially early on, sometimes the RCMS people are actually there in the field and can be very helpful to you in getting some of this data loaded and set up the way you need to. Because as we talked about before, and I think both Jim and Cindy talked about being flexible, each incident is going to have unique requirements. We may need to track, as again, some of the things that Jim talked about earlier was household hazardous waste, white goods. We may need to track those by parish or county or whatever for the individual incident. So, again, we need to be flexible and be able to meet the needs of the incident and the incident commander. Next slide, please. And we're going to talk about RCMS a little bit more, about the personnel table. And I think I mentioned just a bit ago is this is very specific, so we can make very good cost projections from it. Same thing for the equipment. We know that a certain piece of equipment, be it a dozer or a truck or a trailer, whatever piece of equipment we need out there, we know either what it will cost us by hour, by day, by week, by month. Obviously, the longer period that we rent it, the better daily or hourly rate that will compute out to. And again, they can be very specific by the specific piece of equipment. And then other field cost tables would be the things like the incidentals and the supplies and lumber and different things, plumbing pieces, whatever, that we might need. Or there is some equipment that's not on schedule that would be perhaps unique to this incident, like a swamp buggy or something like that that may not be on schedule. Again, once we get the cost, it can be entered into these tables and used day after day or for a weekly or monthly rate if it comes to that. Next slide, please. And I believe we're on slide 41, and we're talking about cost documentation. And all agencies require costs to be documented. EPA costs must be tracked using RCMS, or maybe, not must be. We need to track intramural costs. Again, as we've discussed, those are your payroll and travel costs. Extramural costs, again, would be our contracts and expenses. Coast Guard costs are tracked using CG 5136, and their costs are in two categories of direct costs and indirect costs. Next slide, please. And that should be slide number 42, and talks about the purpose of cost documentation. Again, I think we touched on this earlier, was cost recovery or reimbursement. These can end up in court, so it's absolutely essential that things are documented in a contemporaneous format or fashion. We use the ICS 214 for our daily log. We want to document everything and make sure it gets to the documentation unit before we leave site. And again, that can be either in paper or electronic format. That we have a fiduciary responsibility to the public, and that we have a good audit trail. Again, GAO, OPM, RIG, whomever, again, if it gets into court, people are going to be looking over our shoulders and making sure our I's are dotted and our T's are crossed so that we have good information so that if we can go against a responsible party, we can collect from them rather than coming out of the public funding that taxpayers like yourself and myself may have to fund. Next slide, please. And here we talk about, this should be slide 43, EPA documents related to cost, funding, and procurement, timesheets, and that's IAW Section 5D of OCFO's Financial Emergency Management Costing for Emergency Mission Assignment Policy, and I believe Jim talked about that after the hot washing came out of Katrina. That's been agreed to. We have travel and transportation vouchers. Those are the types of things that we do in the normal course of business. Same thing with commercial payments, miscellaneous, cooperative agreements with the state, contracts with our contractors, and interagency agreements or IAs with other government agencies like the Coast Guard or FEMA. Next slide, please. I believe this is slide 44 and talks about cost categories. Cost documents can be received from other federal agencies with IAs. As IAD there, but I believe the agency now talks about these as IA. And state agencies, we have cooperative agreements. Remind whoever might have that phone going in their background and they want to mute the line. We have, obviously, the categories are payroll, travel, and transportation. Contractor services, construction, probably done in-house, supplies and equipment, indirect costs, and administrative and contract support, IA. Any questions on that? I think We're ready to turn it back over to Cindy if there's no questions.
I don't see any questions coming in online.
Okay, I'll go ahead and get started then. We're going to talk about some of the materials and some of the things you're going to need to take with you once you get activated. First, we're going to talk about just general office supplies, timesheets, phone lists, all those kind of really basic things you need to take with you. The key to keep in mind here is that items may not be available once you get on site. So unless you bring them with you, especially if you're the first to deploy, you may just have to do without, and that's really not a good place to be in. Generally, in ICS, we're expected to bring supplies enough for us to get by for 2 weeks. You're going to need to bring supplies just to work your position, but be prepared. I think somebody mentioned earlier that the raiders are around. People will come by and think, well, finance has papers, pens, you know, tablets. They've always got that kind of stuff. Well, you don't have to give away your supplies. You can refer them to the supply unit leader. And whatever happens, don't use your purchase card to go shopping for office supplies unless you are specifically instructed to do so by the finance section chief, and you'll still need prior approval. Purchase card rules and regulations do not change once these big incidents kick in. You may want to bring paper copies of boilerplate documents in case your computers are not up and running immediately. And it's also a good idea to have your template documents on a C drive or a thumb drive just in case you can't get access behind the firewall. You might want manual timesheets, for instance. Don't forget, always bring a calculator and a battery. Bring extra sign-in sheets for the daily sign-in log. Just bring some hard copies of those. Don't anticipate you're going to be able to print out documents once you get there, at least for the first few days. Even if your computers are up and running, doesn't mean you're going to have access to a printer. You'll be able to find some documents on the NIMS website, but here again, it's just a good idea to download these documents onto your C drive for easy access. Think about what might not be working, especially at first, and just plan for that. Next slide, please. We're on 46 now. Make sure you can get into these financial systems like Financial Data Warehouse and PeoplePlus and GovTrip using your access token, assuming you have one. Make sure you can get in from home or from some remote location. Don't wait to get on site to take your token out and try to learn how to use it. Make sure it works ahead of time. You may have the luxury of having an IT computer person at the incident, but check with your own regional people just to be sure you have access through your token and you can get behind the EPA firewall on your laptop. And I realize I'm assuming that you'll have a token. Everybody doesn't get a token. There's a large fee for those, from what I understand. So we try to just make sure at least one person in the finance section will always have a token available. As far as documents, what to take with you, just need to plan for the worst and hope for the best. Next slide, please. We're on slide 47. It's a good idea to review these resources before you go out to the incident. Just be familiar with the National Response Framework and the NIMS website, where you can see the job aids and the ICS forms. I can't stress enough how important it is to be familiar with the EPA finance systems like Financial Data Warehouse and PeoplePlus and GovTrip. There may be times when the whole finance section is just made up of the finance section chief and the cost unit leader. So you're going to, if that happens, you're going to get a lot of questions about payroll, about PeoplePlus, about travel. They're just going to funnel down to you. So I'm not saying you have to be an expert at all these systems, but certainly try to be very familiar with GovTrip and with PeoplePlus. And this is another reason why you want a list of PeoplePlus contacts across the country, because they're going to be able to help you. Next slide, please. These are simply good reference sites. The EPA NIMS website includes job aids and a lot of useful forms, and it's a good idea to log onto these websites and review what's actually available before the event. Next slide. Don't be afraid to ask questions. Reach back into your own region or others for specific expertise that can help you get the job done easier. Refer back to the examples of the SITREP and the burn rate pages that we've covered with John Anderson and Jim Miller through this presentation. And it's just a good idea to put your boilerplate documents on your C drive or a thumb drive for easy access. Other reference documents could be things like the phone list I just mentioned, phone list of People Plus, phone list of financial contacts who have worked a variety of the financial positions. There's some in every region, most likely. Could be something like the RCMS Help Desk phone number. That's a good thing to have on your list. People Plus contacts, possibly the Cincinnati Travel Help Desk. I have found them to be invaluable when I really get stuck. So just try to think ahead about if you were stuck out there and there's just two of you available and you have all these people coming to you for various questions, who would you like to go to for help? We are currently working on national boilerplates. I don't think we have really got that far on that yet, but you can access the boilerplates that Jim Miller went over today and John Anderson. You can certainly access those, or you can contact any of the three of us, and we could email you copies of the boilerplates that we've established for the sit rep and to develop burn rates. That wouldn't be hard to do at all. But we are currently working on national boilerplates, and they'll be available on the NIBS website shortly. Next slide, please. Now we're going to talk about the Go Kit. The Go Kit's broken down into three major categories: general supplies, electronics, and personal survival items. They're just very generally. The next four slides are going to list specifics in these categories, and this is certainly not meant to be an all-inclusive list. This list will vary from person to person and from incident to incident and also from season to season as far as what you need to take with you. Again, it's recommended that you take supplies enough to get by for at least 2 weeks or maybe three, depending on the length of time for the rotation of field work. Next slide. The first category, general supplies. It's a great idea to have a rolling storage bin. I know you probably don't have one under your desk, neither do I. But it would be a good idea for each finance group in each region to have a rolling storage bin and start accumulating supplies so that when the incident happens, you're ready to go. You've got your go kit pretty much stocked. This list includes, it would be general office supplies, supplies you would need to bring to the field. It could include pens, pencils, papers, notebooks, files, folders, yellow stickies, pretty much anything you need at your desk on a daily basis to get your job done. You can't depend on these supplies being available through your supply unit leader right away, or even at the local office depot near the incident. If by chance you aren't the first cost unit leader at the incident, then your chances are going to be better that supplies will be available. But check with somebody on site to be sure. If you have any questions about just how easy it is to get supplies, just pick up the phone, call the current cost unit leader or the finance section chief before you deploy. In this list, you're also going to see water. I can't stress enough how important it is to take a lot of water with you if you are driving, of course. Take a case or two of water. You never know how scarce water might be at the very first, especially if they're setting up someplace like a school that's been shut down for weeks or months or years. This just might happen to be the biggest place we could get for an incident command post. So water fountains might not be working. If they're working, you might not want to drink that water anyway. So take a case of water if you're driving. Always take your incident management handbook. I think I mentioned earlier, you're going to be surprised how often you refer back to that document. The folders I mentioned in this list could contain information that could be separated by payroll, personnel, travel policies, overtime policies, contracts, various blank forms. For example, this could be an effort to start building the records for your next cost unit leader. You might just start building these folders, and then you'll have the policies for payroll already set up, and you'll have the policies for travel already set up. And once more and more information gets submitted and provided, it's just added to the folder. So you're building a record for the future cost unit leaders. Next slide, please. We're on slide 52 now. Other items you're going to want in your go kit, other necessities, are going to include cell phones, computers, unless they're distributed on site, access tokens. Most of all, don't forget to include chargers for these items. Some may be issued from the host region, or it may be just what you bring with you. Again, just stay flexible. Find out what's going to be available on site. You should definitely know this kind of information before you leave, and if you don't, call the REOC manager or the finance section chief or cost unit leader that's already deployed. The GETS card mentioned here is a government emergency telephone system card. It gets through when other phone cards don't get a high priority. It would be given a higher priority. I don't have one. I don't actually know of anyone that does. Possibly some of the OSCs do. If you have something like a portable printer, scanner, copier, fax all in one, that's like a wonderful thing. And if you have it and if you're driving, take it with you. But here again, I realize some of this is pie in the sky. Like, don't we wish we had that? But, think about what you really need to get the job done out there. Next slide, please. A few more electronic items to be included. Access tokens, batteries, your calculator, DC converter, which is actually the computer power pack. So you're probably going to have that already built in. You're not going to have to worry about that. Don't forget to put blank forms on your thumb drive, like a blank sit rep format, a blank burn rate format, a blank sign-in sheet format, the form we talked about for the emergency time card form. You can put that on your thumb drive also. Things to take with you just in case you can't, and print them out in hard copy also, just in case you can't get your computer up and running right away or you don't have a printer right away, you still have those hard copies. Next slide. Personal survival items. There's a lot of personal discretion in this category. You're just going to need creature comforts at the end of the day. You're going to be putting in a lot of long days. I'm sure you've all heard that when these incidents happen, we work 7 days a week, minimum 12 hours a day. So you need to think of some ways to be nice to yourself and bring along some of your favorite things. It might be reading material. Bring a book light because you may be sharing living spaces with other people. Games, decks of cards. If you take medications, prescription medications, please bring those with you. Don't get so busy you forget to pack them. And don't think you can get the prescription filled down there because the nearest working pharmacy may be 50 miles away. Generally, I have always considered the incidents where I have been deployed to be very safe places to work and to live. But keep in mind, if there's something that's really expensive or really special to you, it's probably just best to leave it at home. I'm sure you know that. But I have never had a problem or heard of a problem on any of the incidents where somebody had something stolen. If you think you're going to go to the site, like work in the field accountant's position, then don't forget to pack steel-toed boots and a hard hat. But the personal survival items are just things that are going to make you comfortable, that are going to make your evenings comfortable, and your days more comfortable. Hand sanitizer, you can never have enough hand sanitizer on these events. You might want a personal coffee cup. That's usually a good thing to have. Just any variety of supplies. Next slide, please. Here we come to the end. This is the web address for the toolbox. This toolbox was developed for the finance section chief, but has a lot of information pertinent to all the finance units. It's found on the epaosc.net webpage under the headquarters logo, and will include job aids and desk procedures. We hope you found this presentation to be helpful and educational, and hopefully now you'll feel more equipped to be an active member of an incident management team as a cost unit leader. Please feel free to contact John Anderson, Jim Miller, or myself if you have further questions or you want to discuss this position a little further. Thanks for attending our webinar, and we hope you'll be willing and ready to participate in our next big incident. And the group will take any questions at this point.
Again, if you're on the telephone, simply hit #6 to take yourself off of mute, and feel free to ask a question directly. Those of you who are streaming the audio, you can continue to type up any comments or questions you may have.
No questions, but good job.
Excellent. Great. Thank you very much. Well, I don't see anything else coming in from the online participants, and I think you guys have done, as was already mentioned, a pretty thorough job covering everything. I wanted to be sure that the instructors don't have any final parting comments or statements.
I hope we didn't overwhelm anybody with all this information, and this is like one of the best jobs going, so don't be intimidated. It's a great job.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. Well, with that, I'm going to direct everybody to the final slide in the package of materials that you should be looking at. So if you're looking at your slides online, this is the important part if you want to get credit for today. You want to move yourself on ahead to the last slide, which is slide number 57. And on slide 57, you'll see two links. The first is a link to the resources page. You can also find that on the seminar homepage. It was also available in the email confirmation message you would have received, where you can access a number of the websites, toolkits, and other resources that were mentioned throughout today's presentation. The second link, though, on slide number 57 is the feedback form link, and that is important in order to receive credit for participating today as part of the training requirements. You can follow the hyperlink if you're looking at the slides online, or you can, again, certainly go back to the seminar homepage and follow the links to the feedback forms that appear along the sides and at the bottom of that page. In order to receive credit for your participation today, you will need to fill out that feedback form. And please note, near the top of the feedback form, there's a box you can check to have a confirmation email sent to you for your record. So that will help verify that you did indeed participate today and as well submitted feedback at the conclusion of today's session. If you are sharing the line, in other words, you have multiple people sitting around a computer, and I know some of you out there in Kansas are doing that right now, each individual person will be required to submit their own feedback form. And you guys have participated in previous Clue-In sessions, so you should be familiar that once you submit a feedback form for one individual, the very next screen will show you a number of links, and one of them will be the option to have another person or let someone else fill out their own feedback form. So you can each take turns submitting the form. It doesn't take very long at all. And again, you will need to submit feedback as an individual user in order to get credit for that. And when you do that, make sure you check the box to have the confirmation email sent to you so that you can keep that for your records and receive credit for participating today. So one final check. I don't see any other comments or questions that have come in. So with that, I'm going to formally close out today's session. I want to thank the organizers and presenters from EPA's Office of Emergency Management for taking the time to put the materials together and to deliver today's session. I'd also like to thank all of our attendees from across the agency who found time to fit this into their schedule. I will thank you in advance for submitting the feedback, and please know we do read each and every one of those comments, so we will use that to help continue to refine our online delivery process and make sure we continue to offer training in this format. So thank you again.
One last question. We didn't get to page 57, and we closed out. This is Region 10.
Region 10, if you have the email that has the seminar homepage on there where you got to the slides, on that seminar homepage, you'll see links that have buttons that appear on the left side, and one of them says feedback. That'll bring you to the very same form. You can also get to the link at the bottom of the page that says feedback form. And just to make sure everybody's got that, what I'm going to do now once we close out is send an email reminder to every person who registered with the URL for the feedback form. So you all get a copy of that to prompt you to go ahead and fill that out.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, again, this will be the formal conclusion for today's session. Thank you all for your time and attention, and I hope that we'll see you or hear from you again on a future Clue-In seminar. Thanks very much. Please have a great day.